welcome to Native America Calling. From Studio 49 in Albuquerque, I'm Monica Brain. The camps are being cleared, but the fight against the pipeline is far from over, according to activists. Today, we'll talk about the past few weeks' events and what's next. We'll also learn a little bit about a march in Washington, D.C. planned for next week and divestment campaigns across the country. And we're asking once again, what's next for Standing Rock? We'll be right back after the news. Stay with us.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Tribal leaders are raising concerns about the impacts of climate change in Indian country. But as Matt Laszlo reports, Republicans and President Trump do not seem too concerned.
While many Democrats are focused on climate change, most Republicans deny humans are to blame, so they're moving ahead on their push to unwind regulations. Here's the new chair of the Senate Indian Affairs Committee, John Hoven of North Dakota.
When a tribe can lose up to $95 million because of bureaucratic delays, it's obvious that something is wrong, but more obvious that something needs to be done about it.
While some tribes want more energy development on their lands, others are having to move away from their land. Don Sampson of the Umatilla Tribe of Oregon says tribes need to band together to get the message out about the impact of climate change on tribes.
And now we have huge impacts across Indian country, and we have one of the first tribes that are climate refugees in America, and that's the Biloxi Chittimachi Choctaw tribe down in Louisiana. They are now having to relocate from their homelands. We have other tribes, the Shishmaref village in Alaska, and 31 other Alaska Native villages who are being threatened.
President of the National Congress of American Indians, Brian Cladisby, says Indian country is ground zero for the impacts of climate change.
We know it's happening. We see it happening. Our communities are place-based societies, and we are experiencing it firsthand.
Cladisby is calling on Republicans to hold hearings into climate change.
Let's have a hearing. Let's have a discussion at the table talking about the environmental impacts on our indigenous communities, because it is affecting our way of life.
For National Native News, I'm Matt Laszlo in Washington.
The Southeast Alaska Tribal Ocean Research Program is studying ocean acidification. Experts have spoken about the possible consequences to shellfish, but its impacts in Southeast Alaska are unknown. As KSTK's Aaron Bolton reports, the tribal research group is seeking answers.
15 tribes have participated in the Southeast Alaska Tribal Ocean Research Program's paralytic shellfish poison testing initiative. The Sitka Tribe of Alaska heads the program and now wants to get a baseline for ocean acidification in the region. Sitka Tribe environmental specialist Esther Kennedy explains that monitoring ocean acidification in nearshore environments has been quite difficult until recently.
Most of the research on OA to date has been in the open ocean.
These environments naturally have wide swings in ocean chemistry due to stream and river volume changes, storms and droughts, and proximity to the open ocean.
I suspect Sitka is going to look a lot more like the Gulf of Alaska than it will look like Wrangell with its huge freshwater input from the Stikine.
Data will be obtained through a buoy in Sitka Sound and a scientific instrument known as a percolator, which will test water samples from participating tribes. Both instruments will help answer how difficult it is for organisms to form a shell in southeast waters. The project will also shed light on effects on salmon and marine mammals that eat them. Kennedy says with such environmental diversity in southeast, she hopes to use the project's data as a model for other parts of Alaska. The Sitka tribe expects to have the buoy up and running within a month and plans to start testing samples from around the region in September. For National Native News, I'm Aaron Bolton.
Native American remains from Ohio will be handed over for reburial to the Miami Tribe of Oklahoma, which has ties to the state. Three men have been sentenced for digging up and selling the remains. The Columbus Dispatch reports the remains and artifacts were taken from private property near Columbus 5 years ago. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
New National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
Support by Amerind Media Group, offering compelling and entertaining films, TV series, and documentaries about the indigenous peoples from around the world. We are honored to share their cultures, traditions, and stories online with a no-charge trial at nativeflix.com.
Support by Bears Ears National Monument, created to honor tribes and protect traditional access. You can tell President Trump to honor tribes and protect Bears Ears at protectbearsears.org.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
This is Native America Calling. I'm Monica Brain, sitting in for Tara Gatewood. This week, a federal court delayed a decision on halting construction on the Dakota Access Pipeline. And next week, pipeline opponents, otherwise known as water protectors, will descend on Washington, D.C. for a march. What do you think about how everything turned out so far? We want to hear from everyone today. Our phone lines are open for you. We first talked about this fight in May of 2016, and a lot has happened since then. The bottom line is that oil could be flowing through the pipeline within a week. Either way, the conversation around pipelines and energy extraction is now front and center in our communities. In the next hour, we'll hear from some of those who were active in the fight from the beginning. And we want to know, what has this movement started? And what should we do next? The number to call in and participate is 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. Joining us now is LaDonna Brave Bull Allard. She is the landowner of the Sacred Stone Camp, and she is from the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe. Welcome back to Native America Calling, LaDonna.
Thank you. And I am glad to be here, maybe just to clear up some misunderstandings and help people understand what's happening on the ground.
Absolutely. So what is going on? What I've read is that Sacred Stone, parts of Sacred Stone Camp were cleared. What has happened?
So they issued an order for us to vacate, and in that process, because of the Corbell buyback plan, some of my half-brothers and sisters had sold their portion to the tribe. That made the tribe 66% owner into my father's land. So they own 190 acres, and me and my two brothers and sisters own 127 acres. And they are saying, because they are now the major landowner, that they have a right to the land. So those are just some legal things that we're going to have to deal with. I did ask permission from the BIA to buy back that portion of my father's land so that we could always have it. And but the community of Kennenbaugh, North Dakota, Cody Two Bears, passed a resolution from the community requesting all the camps to be closed. And then from there, the resolution went to the tribal council, and then they passed a resolution to close all the camps. And so on February 15th, we received the first notice that said that we had possible trespassers on tribal trust land, and the tribe was giving us, I can't remember what the paper said, 10 days to vacate the land. And so from that point on, we sat down with our people, we had prayer ceremony, and the decision was that we would start taking down the property and cleaning up the area and leave peacefully to re-set up a temporary camp and in another location until we can figure out the land claims, but to continue standing up and praying for the water. And so that is what we did. I am so honored for each person at Sacred Stone Camp because no one was arrested. We did our best to follow the law. We were cleaning. We were taking care of everything. We were packing up. We believed on the day of the blockade that we had until noon, but they set up the blockade 2 hours earlier at 10 o'clock, which left some people not being able to get, like, their personal property, like their winter coats and their personal clothes and other things. But we're trying to figure out how to get people in. We have set up so that we could get people that wanted to go home until we get everything straightened out, bus tickets, plane tickets, and train tickets. We've given people gas, money to get gas. We've helped people move to safe locations. I'm so honored by Father Folberg from the Episcopal Church who opened his churches to help us store supplies until we can get them to a place and to allow people to stay in the churches. There are really some amazing people, and the people that are here that are still standing are standing even stronger. This morning we started the morning with a prayer ceremony. They came and prayed. We are doing our best. So right now what we're trying to do is gather vans to be able to send Sacred Stone people to Washington, D.C.
To attend the march that's happening next week. Is that right?
Next step is.
Yeah. And LaDonna, thanks so much for sharing all of that. I'm just curious, did you have to clear absolutely everything off of your property? I know you said that the tribe is a 66% landowner. So does that mean that they are able to even say you can't have a tent in your front yard, for example? Because I know you have a house on this property.
Those are all legal things that I don't have answers for. Mm. I need to talk to a lawyer that, because I really don't have the answers for all of that. This is like, and yes, I know people said I should have known ahead of time. When the buyback plan happened, I did go to the BIA and asked for information, and they told me they couldn't give the information at that time because they didn't have all the data in. And then when I went up in June, they didn't have the information. So I was asking for the information, but it seems like everybody else got the information before me. And that's probably my fault because I get so busy with everything that's happening on the ground that I'm not, as they say, Googling on the computer.
Well, LaDonna, we do appreciate you joining us and sharing your information and what's been going on. And in a little bit, I'd like to ask you to reflect back on what's happened over the past year and a half. But I just want to let our listeners know we're talking about Standing Rock today. If you've got something that you'd like to share, give us a call. The number is 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. Let's go to Donna in Wasilla, Alaska, tuned in on KNBA. Donna, are you there?
Good morning.
Good morning. What would you like to share?
Well, I am just excited that the Native people are banding together and speaking up in unity. And I think that's what we should emphasize is unity, that we can have unity to voice our opinions and also, you know, to do it in a kind way. Sometimes it's hard to be kind when you see something that you want so badly. And we want clean water and we want to have our resources handled wisely. We want all of this stuff and that's our heart. And hope that everybody can be kind no matter who the person is that we're talking to. And that's going to give us a lot more. You know, they say you can catch more flies with honey than you know, vinegar, whatever that saying is, you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So just wish everybody a good day and just take one day at a time and look for the best.
All right, Donna, thanks so much for giving us a call from Wasilla, Alaska. I'd like to add another voice to the conversation. Joining us now is Tara Hauska. She's a lawyer and National Campaigns Director for Honor the Earth, and she is Kuchiching First Nations. Welcome back to Native America Calling, Tara.
How are you?
It's great to have you. I'm doing well. So, LaDonna shared with us a little bit about the camps have been closed, or some of the camps have been closed. Is there anything else you can share about what's going on the ground there in North Dakota?
Yeah, I mean, I've been focusing very heavily on the management of now close to 800 cases that have been brought by the state of North Dakota against people standing up for the water and for the future generations. You know, we've got a massive, massive caseload, probably one of the largest the state has ever seen in such a short period of time. And, you know, have been working tirelessly to make sure that we have court support, jail support, funding and resources to make sure people actually have representation. There's simply not enough public defenders in the state of North Dakota to even begin to address this situation. And so we've had to continuously fundraise through all these months and try to make sure that we can get people out of jail and that we can get them a representation when they actually go through court.
Yeah, I was curious, Tara, is it normal? I saw that a lot of the charges were like promoting a riot or participating in a riot. Is that something that normally happens when there's a protest and people are arrested? Is that a common charge?
It's something I've never seen. I've never seen people being charged with a riot who are unarmed and not engaging in a riot. You know what I mean? Like, it's standing in a, you know, in the way of a street or, you know, peacefully demonstrating in a location and then, you know, being asked to leave and then leaving. That's not a riot. You know, a riot is, I think we all know what a riot is. You know what I mean? It's something that's violent. It's something that's extreme, and seeing people, you know, arrested while praying, pulled out of sweat lodges, that simply does not, to me, indicate a riot. Certainly not the legal definition of a riot. So, you know, we've seen a pretty serious level of oppression by the state of North Dakota and excessive charges being brought, you know, going back and charging people that originally had misdemeanors with a felony charge. I personally was charged with criminal trespass on a public road getting into my car. You know, and charged with failure to disperse. I mean, that's, you know, on its face, like I was getting into my car and was arrested on a public road. And that's happened to many, many, many people throughout this, facing charges for something that simply cannot be proven. And we've had some dismissals too. I mean, we just had a number of dismissals this last week. The judge heard the case and, you know, these are lands where there was no trespassing signs posted. There was not any fines. There was not any indication of that. And so, you know, they didn't meet the requirements of proving criminal trespass. You know, the prosecutor actually has to prove all these cases against these people and actually show that people are guilty and not innocent of these crimes, and meet the statutory definitions of what the crime is.
Do you think that you will eventually see just a sort of mass dismissal because of the large volume of cases?
Certainly not. I mean, we've definitely also had people that have been, you know, found guilty, and they've been levying very, very large fines. You know, one public defender said this is, in his 20 years of practice, this is the largest fine he's ever seen associated with a misdemeanor charge. People are being charged with, you know, $1,500 for criminal trespass for, you know, a low-level crime. So I think, you know, more cases have been continually brought. Like I said, they've gone back and upgraded misdemeanors to felonies. The state of North Dakota has made a significant amount of money off of this as well. You know, we've spent almost $500,000 in bail. The Freshet Collective, if folks are looking for ways to help, you know, this is what we've been using as our way of trying to fundraise and provide legal resources for people so they have contact with the court support team on the ground. You know, and we've spent a great deal of money mostly on bail at this point, and also on attorneys, and trying to provide staffing, making sure people can actually get back to the state of North Dakota. We have defendants from all over the country. This is a very, very large effort. So,
yeah, we are talking about Standing Rock today. If you want to get in on the conversation, give us a call. The number is 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. LaDonna Brave Bull Allard is with us from Sacred Stone Camp. Also, we have Tara Hauska. She is from Honor the Earth. Tara, I know that this is, we're not using terms, we're not trying to use terms like this is over or things like that, but what is next? I mean, it really sounds like oil will be going through that pipeline any day now.
I think, you know, although the ground fight and the people that have been resisting for many, many months are, you know, being pushed out by various groups off of both treaty lands and off of LaDonna's lands, you know, that doesn't mean that the fight is over. There has been an effort throughout these last months that has been growing in getting more and more people on board, which is divestment. You know, so divesting from the banks that actually fund Dakota Access and making a substantive impact in their bottom line, because big oil seems to at least hear the bottom line. They don't tend to like hearing our voices. They will, you know, run over our rights, you know, insert themselves into governance systems such as North Dakota, where, you know, you see this flow of big oil in almost every action that's happening here. But at the end of the day, you know, we have the say in how our money is being invested. And so, you know, targeting the banks like Wells Fargo, like Citibank that fund this project, you know, we've had people pull up tens of millions of dollars of their personal money and put it into credit unions. We've had cities now, the city of Seattle, the city of Santa Monica, pull up billions of dollars canceling contracts with these, you know, with these massive banks. And so I think that that movement is something that's incredibly important, and one that we should all be looking at moving forward. You know, we have our own agency in how our money is used. And if they won't listen to our voices, they'll certainly listen to our dollars.
Yeah, I think it's really cool to hear like big cities doing things like that. But what about like the average person who's like, well, I have, you know, $400 in my savings account. Like, how much will that really affect? Is it more like a symbolic act, or, you know, the collective together?
No, absolutely not. You know, I would put that on par with people saying, well, I just have one vote.
Right.
I just have one voice and it can't possibly make a difference. No, it really does make a difference. You know, especially when you're looking at, okay, well, you have just one vote. If one of your friends is running for city council, who's not going to be, you know, oppressive to minority groups or to protected classes, maybe they only need 10 votes to get in office, you know, or maybe you're just a tipping point of one other person of getting in that actually has a progressive stance on things and cares about our environment and cares about the people. And so when it comes to Dakota Access and, you know, pulling your money out of the bank, I mean, yeah, okay, so you have $400, you have $200, you have 20 bucks in your account. All that's added up to being over $60 million. We're close to, you know, tens of millions of dollars every month have been pulled out of Dakota Access, you know, funding. And to the point now that we've actually had response from Wells Fargo, you know, this massive bank corporation, saying, you know, that we understand that there's some issues and concerns about Dakota Access and that we, you know, felt that it was a good investment, blah, blah, blah. I mean, but that says a lot, right, that they've actually been forced to respond to us. We're at $65 million. We're almost at $65 million that people have pulled out of banks and people have gone in and closed their accounts. That affects them, you know, that affects their bottom line. And I think it empowers people also to do something more than just a rally or a march. I mean, those are important also. But we really have to be, I think, more effective and make a more substantive change when we're doing these things, such as, you know, an encampment, a resistance encampment on the pipeline route in treaty lands, going to banks, pulling your money out, going to legislators saying this is enough, you know, more than just what we've been doing so far.
Yeah. Absolutely. Tara, thanks so much for sharing that. We really appreciate it. And we are talking about Dakota Access Pipeline. If you want to get in on the conversation, give us a call. The number is 1-800-996-2848. We're going to talk about the march in Washington and shortly after the break, but we'd also like to hear from you. Are you planning to go to the march in D.C.? Give us a call, 1-800-996-2848. 2848. Let's go to Daryl in Holy Cross, Alaska, tuned in on KSKO. Hey there, Daryl.
Hello.
What would you like to share today?
Oh, just a quote from Louis L'Amour, Westward the Tide. And he's talking about, oh, the land and stuff like that. He's like, one if he says, the white man's not fit for survival. And in the quote there, he says, where you have forest, you leave desolation. Where you found plenty, you leave famine. Where you found prairies waving with tall grass, you leave a desert. Finally, you will turn upon yourselves and fight over the scraps until all is gone. And you turn and stare about in astonished wonderment at the land you have ravished, and you will say, Great Spirit, what have we done?
Thank you so much for sharing that. We really appreciate it. Giving us a call from Holy Cross, Alaska, tuned in on KSKO. LaDonna, we're about to go to a break, but I would just wanted to give you a moment if there is something else that you wanted to share about the Sacred Stone Camp.
So, you know, with all the moving, the confusion, the absolute terror of the people, you know, we had to all sit down and pray together and talk. What do we do from here? And I tell each of them, this is not a place or a location. This is a thought. How do we change our world thought so that we can go forward in the future that's going to be a better life for our grandchildren? So really, we need to start thinking about green energy. We need to start changing how we live.
Yeah.
And start living with the earth more. And so to me, there is more of a positive future if we change our world thought now.
Yeah, LaDonna, that's a great idea. And I want to throw that out there to our listeners. Whether you went to Standing Rock or you've been watching it through your computer or through the media, has it changed the way that you think about how you act individually? Has it changed the way you think about energy, about pipelines, about how we get our energy? And have you made some changes as a result of it? Give us a call. The number is 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. LaDonna Brave Bull Allard is with us. We also have Tara Hauska from the Honor the Earth. And after the break, we're going to talk with Candy Mossett about a march that's coming up next week. But there's still time to get in on the conversation. 1-800-996-2848. Menstruation is a sacred event in some tribal cultures. When a young woman gets her first period, it's sometimes acknowledged by the whole family and the community and celebrated with a ceremony. But it seems, afterwards, you're not supposed to talk about it. That's on the next Native America Calling.
Square walk, hey, oh, we are.
Support by the Fred Jones Jr. Museum of Art at the University of Oklahoma presenting Photosynthesis, new photographs by Navajo Will Wilson plus works by early 20th century photographer Edward Curtis. Whereas Curtis posed his subjects, Wilson invited his subjects, some whose relatives were included in Curtis's 1930 Indians of Oklahoma, to choose how they posed. Photosynthesis through April 2nd, info at fjjma.ou.edu.
Support by the Albuquerque Hispano Chamber of Commerce's Convention and Tourism Department, providing complete convention and visitors planning services to Native American conventions. Information on convention and tourism services at siabq.org.
Support by Ramona Farms, offering wholesome and delicious foods from our heirloom crops as our contribution to a better diet for the benefit of all people. We are honored to share our centuries-old farming and culinary traditions online at ramonafarms.com.
Welcome back to Native America Calling. I'm Monica Brain. Thanks so much for joining us today. Every Friday, we send out an email newsletter with the upcoming shows. If you'd like to get on that list, visit our website, nativeamericacalling.com, and click on Sign Up. We're talking about Standing Rock today. Phone lines are open. Today's your opportunity to sound off. How do you feel about how everything turned out? I know the fight isn't over, but many of the camps are cleared and some are moving on to other pipeline fights like Keystone XL or the Trans Mountain Pipeline in Canada. Phone lines are open. Give us a call. The number is 1-800-996-2848. Let's go straight to the phone lines. We've got Lauren in Thunder Valley, South Dakota, tuned in on Keeley. Hey there, Lauren.
Hi, hello.
What would you like to share?
I'm from the International Indigenous Youth Council. We formed in Standing Rock in about August when things had just started heating up, you should say. I would just like to say that this fight hasn't stopped and that the momentum that we've gained from Standing Rock is just pouring over everywhere, and we can see that in our daily lives. You turn on the news and there's another uprising because people are realizing what we did in Standing Rock they can do by themselves at their home, you know, wherever they're at. And just the fact that we were youth and we started it and we rose up against it and we had so many people come behind us and help us with it, it makes it that much more special. And people are seeing this. They're seeing, oh, these, you know, Chichi kids from the res, they're up here fighting these militarized police forces. You know, they're getting their arms broken. They're getting tear gassed. They're getting maced. They're getting beaten. They're getting arrested. They're getting charged with felonies. They're doing all of this for being in ceremony and being in prayer. You know, we're an inspiration, and we don't mean to be that, but the fight's not over yet, and we're just now starting. And I see that everywhere, and it just makes me happy.
Yeah, absolutely, Lauren. Thanks so much for sharing that. We really appreciate it. I want to bring another voice into the conversation. Joining us now from Billings, Montana, is Candy Mossett. She is the Extreme Energy and Just Transition Campaign Organizer for the Indigenous Environmental Network. And Candy is enrolled Mandan Hidatsa in Arikara. Welcome back, Candy.
Dosha, thanks for having me. I'm getting all emotional listening to Lauren.
I know. That's exactly what I wanted to ask you. You know, I mean, I've heard that this is a youth-led movement. We've got a person telling us this right now. I mean, how does that make you feel?
It makes me feel good. I mean, Lauren and the Youth Council have been really inspirational. I mean, it started because they ran, you know, they did a short run in their community, and then they're like, hey, let's run to Nebraska to the offices of the Army Corps of Engineers, and then they're like, hey, let's run all the way to D.C. And all of that traction was happening before people actually started to see what made the camps really big, and that was like some of the violence and the police repression that was happening. And that's when the story kind of went viral across the United States. And so I think Standing Rock just shows that this country and the people that live here are hungry for a change, and that we collectively showed that it can happen, and it can happen through nonviolent direct action. They had to admit that there weren't any weapons found at the camp. And, you know, it was one of those situations where I saw the headline for the show here, and it said, is the fight at Standing Rock over? And it's absolutely not. The physical camp, the physical place we were moved, forced out of at gunpoint, you know, while we were trying to clean up, which we had only been doing for about 2 or 3 weeks in a camp that was the size of
more than most of the communities in North Dakota. We had 15,000 people there at one point. And so North Dakota was just great on jumping on this bandwagon about, oh, they're polluting the water and trying to spin the narrative that we were the ones that were harming the water. So it was just really sickening that that happened. But we have been all along saying that we are going to continue the divestment campaign that Tara was talking about, which the website for that, by the way, is defunddapl.org. And you can go there and defund now. And I know you were saying, hey, how can one person make a difference? Well, individual divestments are over $73 million right now. So it can happen with individuals. And we kind of started organizing this march in D.C. a few months back, just because the whole idea is not around a physical space like the camps. And we had people in North Dakota and different ones saying, oh, we won. This is over. It's finally over. And our whole thing is, this is not over. I mean, we as Native peoples have been fighting for over 500 years with this exact same narrative that you cannot use capitalism to destroy the earth and expect it to ever be a sustainable thing. And we're simply fighting to protect water, and that's for every single person on this planet. And so that was what the larger picture is about. And so we are inviting everybody, you know, to come to Washington, D.C. next week as just the next step in the movement to show that this fight isn't over, that we haven't gone anywhere.
Yeah.
And it's called
Candy. So sorry to interrupt you. I just wanted to get the date of that because we haven't mentioned it. What is the date next week in D.C.?
So if you come out, we're doing a teepee camp from March 7th, 8th, and 9th that will be south of the Ellipse. So just south of the White House there, kind of by the Washington Monument, there will be a teepee encampment. And there will be water ceremony every morning at 10 a.m. and then cultural programming for 2 hours following that. And then we'll have programming and presentation in the evenings from 4 to 7. That's all open to the public March 7th, 8th, and 9th, with special things happening on March 8th, which is International Women's Day, Indigenous Women's Day. So we'd like people to come out and participate in these presentations and programming, which is all leading up to and culminating in a march and a rally that is happening on Friday, March 10th, beginning at the Army Corps of Engineer offices, where we will have a beginning rally and speakers list. We'll be going to the Trump Towers following that and then ending up at Lafayette Park for our rally. And we have performers that will be performing in addition to people that will be speaking. We have people like Prolific the Rapper, who was at Standing Rock and did a video and talked about the water protectors. He'll be performing on stage. We have Taboo from the Black Eyed Peas that has confirmed and will be performing on stage with us during that rally, and various other speakers from the grassroots movement, as well as from various tribal leadership. So again, this is next week in Washington, D.C., open to the public. The teepee camp is March 7th, 8th, and 9th, and the rally in March is approximately 10 to 2 on Friday, March 10th. And people are definitely invited to come and join us to say that this isn't just about Standing Rock. This is about the spirit that lives within all of us as Native Nations continue to rise. Mm. And that's the name of the website, nativenationsrise.org.
I'll put a link up to that website on our website, nativeamericacalling.com, after the show. And we're talking Standing Rock. If you haven't noticed, give us a call if you want to get in on the conversation. It's 1-800-996-2848. Let's go to Russell in Oglala, South Dakota, tuned in on Keeley. Hey there, Russell. Are you there?
Oh, yeah. Good afternoon. Good morning. Thank you for having me on the program.
Absolutely.
Yeah, my comment is that water is life, and as a Sun Dancer, we understand that completely. To all of the brothers and sisters who have been fighting in Standing Rock for water protectors, you know, I pray for you, and I wish that good things will happen for you. It's very inspirational as a young person. Our ancestors have, you know, foreseen this. And one of our most greatest grandfathers said, let us put our minds together and see what better future we can make for our children. And that was Sitting Bull. I have a sister. Her name is Aloan. She was up in Standing Rock for many months. And I'm very proud of her and her activities that she has done in protecting our water. water is life, and it's very detrimental to have a president such as Donald Trump, who has basically declared war on Indian country. I feel that as young people, it's time for us now to come together in unity and solidarity to protect our way of life and to ensure that our way of life continues for the future generations. In reference to the Oglala Aquifer and Madison Water Formation, the pipeline is gonna affect everything that we hold dear to us. And it's not only going to be Indian country, but it's going to be non-Indians also. So in closing, I would like to say for all those water protectors, carry the spirit of Crazy Horse, and may you continue with this inspirational fight.
Russell, thanks so much for giving us a call. Tuned in on Keeley today. We really appreciate it. Let's try one more call. We've got Eric in North Idaho tuned in on KSFC. Hey there, Eric.
Hi, I'm so glad you guys are doing what you do. It's the courage that that people at Standing Rock have gone through. There's so many of us, and I'm not Native, but I've worked at the Coeur d'Alene Tribe facilities all out over the years. And I have a question, really. Now, when they took off the mountaintops in the South, I think they had to sign some kind of contract that they were going to refurbish it or set it right again. And my question is, are they going to do that with the pipelines? In other words, once they've laid these pipelines, is there a contractual agreement that they have to pull the pipeline out after they're done using it and return it to the way it was before? That's my question.
I see. That's a good question. And Candy, do you know anything about this? I know with we've done a couple of shows about mining, and there's always in the mining plans, some 10, 15, 20 year plan after the mine is finished to reclimate and fix everything. Is there, or are they just planning on having this pipeline forever?
Well, my understanding is that when you look at a map of the pipelines in the United States alone, it's just full of old aging pipeline infrastructure that's still buried underground. I haven't seen anything that says that they're going to remove this pipeline, Dakota Access Pipeline, when it becomes non-usable, which is going to be sooner rather than later because of the economics that are happening in the Bakken Formation where this oil is coming from. The oil is going down. I mean, it's just common sense economically to understand that the fossil fuel industry is the way of the past and the renewable energy economy is the way of the future. Unfortunately, Donald Trump is a known climate change denier. I doubt that they're going to remove any pipes. In fact, he just made a declaration this morning about Keystone XL pipeline. He said, we're going to change our mind, basically. It doesn't have to be U.S. steel that we're using for that pipe. They're already changing the things that they were trying to say in earlier memorandums about pipelines just to get them pushed through. And you know, so I believe the answer to that question is no. They're going to leave it there to rust.
I mean, it's possible. I know this with the Sandpiper line, I believe it was, or line three, that line was an already existing line that needed to be replaced was the issue. And we had Winona LaDuke on the show a while back, and she, said that it was just not a good opportunity to replace one oil pipeline with another. And she suggested more water pipelines, which makes sense to me. But Tara, what do you think? I mean, the reality is that this country uses a lot of energy, and the energy needs to come from somewhere. How realistic is it for us to have sort of a change in our perspectives and head away from the fossil fuel economy?
To the former question, what he was asking about as far as pipeline abandonment. So there is, like Candy was saying, there's an existing network of pipelines that cross all over the United States, including Line 3, which is a 67-year-old pipeline, aging in the soil. And rather than, cleaning up that mess, instead Enbridge just wants to put in a new line because their entire economic structure is based on expansion. Always expansion, even if the assets become stranded within a couple of years because the pipeline industry and the oil industry is becoming less profitable. So that's a way that, we can look at self-determination and local governance as a really strong tool. creating pipeline abandonment statutes and regulations that are forced upon these companies that put these projects through our lands. You know, there are several cities that have done this throughout the country, putting in place pipeline abandonment statutes or all-out fracking bans. That's happening. And I think that's something that we, especially in the Donald Trump administration, need to look at is, you know, how can we protect our own communities if the federal government is basically going to force through every project it possibly can and just greenlight everything? You know, what can we do at a state and local level, at a tribal level, to protect our lands?
Yeah.
You know, as far as like the stability, you know, I mean, the oil industry is dying. You know, the oil industry is in a model where it has to constantly expand. It has to constantly build new lines to keep their investors engaged. But, you know, that model is no longer working. You know, the oil industry is, you know, reaching a point where it's just not really that profitable anymore. And we should be moving towards renewable energy. We should be moving towards green energy. We should be moving towards a future. You know, this is dated technology that we've had for a very long time. It's very dirty technology that contaminates our drinking water, that contaminates the soil, that contaminates our way of life, you know, our very survival. And so moving towards, you know, solar, moving towards wind, these are things that have been happening and should be happening at a much more dramatic pace. However, the oil industry is very entrenched and has a lot of money, and it has a lot of power and a lot of lobbying power.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, looking at ourselves, local governance, local politics, saying, no, we don't want this anymore. We're switching and creating jobs locally.
Yeah, absolutely. Tara, thanks so much for that. Let's take a few more calls. Those phone lines are lighting up. We've got an anonymous caller in New Mexico. Hello there.
Hi, good morning. I just wanted to follow up on the Indigenous Youth Council. I just really want to praise them and thank them. You know, they're doing something that a lot of us older natives, you know, can't get away or we're just a little too old to do stuff like that. But thank you guys for putting yourself on the line, and especially for our young Jicarilla up-and-coming leaders, Lauren and Alex, Christina and Aaron Wise. Big shout-out to you guys. We appreciate you. We love you. You know, all of us older natives, let's support these young guys with our finances, our prayers, our support of any kind, because the fight is not over. But I'm so thankful that we have young guys like this who are willing to put themselves on the line. So thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks so much for giving us a call. We appreciate it. And LaDonna, what do you think about the discussion around young people? I remember early on in this, when we reached out to you, you were mentioning that there were young people involved and mentioned some names of people that we should reach out to. Are you encouraged to hear how much young people have been involved in this movement?
This movement is a young people's movement. And I think, we know, I will just say, you know, Jocelyn Charger, who stayed here at the house the other night, and I was telling her, I said, Jocelyn, you're my hero. Because I watch these young people do amazing things. They have this idea of what their future should be like. And I think that we need to follow these young people. They are the center of this movement. This is why this movement has spread worldwide. It is because of them. It is because of their vision of what they want in their life. So, yes. To me, this whole movement has been the youth.
Let's take some more calls. We've got Marcella in Cheyenne River, South Dakota, tuned in on KLND. Hello, Marcella.
Good morning.
Good morning.
This is Marcella Thibault from Cheyenne Eagle Butte, south of the Standing Rock Reservation. My great-grandfather, Rain in the Face, fought in the Battle of the Little Bighorn. And they won that battle. He was from the Hunkpapa tribe. They won that battle. We won the right to the flag, but they were treated like prisoners. And I have a feeling, a support for what's going on at Standing Rock. And I want to compliment LaDonna Allard for her stand. What an honorable, beautiful lady she is. And for what she's doing, not only for Standing Rock, but for us on Cheyenne River and the nation as well. when we brought the ghost shirt back from Glasgow, Scotland, to Wounded Knee, one that was taken from Wounded Knee, we brought it back. And one of the comments I made there was, we look to the seventh generation to rise up, to cast aside despair. And I don't recall the rest of it. But I see the young people standing up and doing that, and they're being supported by not only people here in the United States, but in other nations as well. And I want to thank again LaDonna Allard and to say hats off for her stand and all that she's doing for us. And again, I thank you all.
Thanks, Marcella. LaDonna?
Yeah. Yes.
It's a lot to think about when we think about, you know, the fact that this started just a little bit ago with having people on your land, on your property, camping, taking a stand against this pipeline. Moving forward, what are you thinking about?
Moving forward, first, I'm so honored that Marcella called in. You know, that woman is a hero in her own right. The moving forward, I'm hoping that the world has awoke, wherever you stand, wherever you live, to protect the water. The water is so important, and I think that was the key to everything, the word water, because it affects every living being. And I think that we must continue to stand by the water. We must continue to pray. We must continue to stand in peace and dignity for the water. And I believe that will change world thought.
Hmm. Well, I hope that too. Candy, what do you think? Are we waking up? Are we awake?
We are, and that's why... We still have a ways to go, but that's why this is also important, because it's just a moment in time. It's, you know, human life is just the blink of an eye for each lifespan when you think about Earth time. So what we're trying to do here is not only show what we want to stop, but that's what we want to show is what we want to create. And that's what just transition means. We understand that right now we put gas in our cars. We're not stupid. A lot of people say, well, how did you get to the camp? And I'm like, hey, I drive a hybrid. And I could hardly afford it. But it's a propaganda machine that exists in this country to make us believe that we don't have these other options or choices when we really do. We could have a solar panel where we plug our car in instead of having to have combustion engines. But it's the powers that be, the Koch brothers, you know, these different industries that control the narrative and then control the propaganda that comes on television. So people need to understand and wake up that it's not us against them. It's not about jobs, because we want jobs, especially for our friends and family members. We just don't want them getting killed and hurt on those kinds of jobs that are in the oil industry, in the fossil fuel industry. And so we're building the sustained community still at buildwithstandingrock.net. We're building the Mini Wichoni sustained community that we started planning last September or even before that, because we knew that people were going to say, oh, you're just trying to stop jobs and stop infrastructure. I just think it's so important for the world to wake up and see that there is a better way that we can live on this planet. And yes, our energy does need to come from somewhere. But first of all, let's look at consumption and how much waste we have in our energy systems, especially in the United States, and how we can live better by using less energy and by using different energy sources, and not believe the propaganda that we don't have choices, because we do.
Let's squeeze in one more call. We've got Jamie in Idaho Falls, Idaho. Jamie, real quick, we're right at the end of the hour.
Hi, good greetings from Idaho Falls. And I'm someone who was born and raised in Seattle, very into the culture of the coastal Salish people there, and as an environmentalist and a social justice person, and also a person in recovery. And I moved to Idaho Falls recently, which is just a little north of the Shoshone-Bannock tribal reservation. And I've been a steady listener to your program. I know Tara's gone today, but thank you for guest hosting. And I just appreciate the news from Native Country because I don't get a lot of it out here, and the government relationship with tribes is quite different here than it is. It's very progressive in Seattle. And I was so happy to hear you reporting about the banking withdrawals movement and that Seattle City was involved in that and taking part in that to support Standing Rock and the no Dakota Access Pipeline. So I was just very happy to hear that, and it's great to hear you every day on the radio and just give me a boost in my day. So thank you so much.
All right, Jamie, thanks so much. Tara, we're right at the end of the hour. Any critical websites you think people should be visiting, taking a look at as this issue moves forward?
Yeah, I mean, I think Candy brought up one, so defundapple.org, that's part of the divestment campaign. Freshetcollective.org, that's freshetcollective.org, that's working on the fundraising and jail support, court-supported legal team. The Water Protector Legal Collective, they have a Facebook page, you can contact them through there. That's also another legal team that's on the ground helping with manage this massive caseload. Yeah, and Native Nations Rise. I can't even mention that too. I mean, there's yeah. definitely different places to follow, and Honor the Earth and Indigenous Environmental Network. You know, those pages put out content all the time.
All right. Tara, thanks so much for joining us. Also, thanks so much to LaDonna Brave Bull Allard and Candy Mossett. We're back on Monday with a show about menstruation. Thanks so much to our Native America Calling crew. Our executive producer is Art Hughes. Tara Gatewood is our host. Our associate producer is Andy Murphy. Derek Toledo engineered our show today. Antonia Gonzalez is the anchor and producer of National Native News. I'm senior producer Monica Brain. Have a good weekend.
Yat e betinish klejisani nit linigi ni jebzil don lehni zanot zit anhi nit egot eya digi zeligi ne eltchi onen eto leh benacha ehosen binige khala betinish klejin linigi sani lad eya yit ara be inan dahat e a je pataza besoch ahna ne ledo lap binige hadet e leh besh behanet ajik 1-800-318-2596 edo dibation se case bigit healthcare.gov a message from the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services.
When you file online for your PFD, every Alaskan can support great causes, including Native America Calling. Just pick, click, give, and select KNBA-FM Kewaunik Broadcast Corporation. With one donation at a time, good things will happen all over Alaska. Support by the Fred Jones Jr. Museum of Art at the University of Oklahoma. Photosynthesis. New photographs by Navajo Will Wilson plus early works by Edward Curtis. Photosynthesis through April 2nd. Info at fjjma.ou.edu.
Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kewaunik Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization located in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, the McCune Charitable Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Music is provided by Brent Michael Davids. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.